Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types about politics from a left-winged perspective. Tonight is the night of February 11th, 2016, and we just watched the Democratic National Debate. I am Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And we have a very special guest again joining us, Mrs. Arliss Bunny.
Hey!
So happy to have you back on with us.
Glad to be here.
Really, really glad to have you. And yeah, we're gonna talk about this debate. It's yet another one. We kind of forgot, and I think Rachel and I looked at each other earlier, and we're like, "Oh yeah, the debate tonight."
If CNN hadn't sent a push message on my phone, I'd have missed it. I would have completely forgotten.
So. Yeah. I mean, that's like. It's like I have mixed feelings about it because it ticks me off that Debbie Wasserman Schultz tried to hide these debates and put them when no one would watch them for some reason. Well, for a dumb reason. I know the reason. It's just – it's mind-bogglingly stupid. But like now there are a bunch, so now they're
have
like –
Have you heard the joke about this?
No. What is that?
The joke is, I was so glad to see Bernie on SNL. Working around that Saturday at midnight Democratic debate schedule was brutal.
For real, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm going to turn over to you guys in a second. But just my overall impressions are, as usual, hey, I really like both these candidates.
Yeah.
I like them both.
I think we're really lucky. I think it's if I was a Republican, I would be having a hard as hell trying to figure out who to vote for because it's, it's a big selection of crap. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we lose.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know that by reading social media.
It's
gotten very, very contentious, and they're really going out of their way to vilify whoever they're not going for. But we'll get to all of that.
I'm glad the candidates are speaking out against that. I'm really pleased about that. Bernie's campaign has really shut down the personal attacks and criticisms his Reddit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, they're trying real hard to cut it off. And it's not a perfect world. And, you don't always get where you're trying to go. But I think they're making an effort. I think it's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah. And I don't think the Clinton campaign, at least overtly, and nothing I've seen or heard, I don't think anything's been necessarily out of bounds. Maybe there's some things that use some clarification and is right for Bernie to push back on. But I haven't seen anything nasty from them yet. Fingers crossed.
I agree.
So, Rachel, how about your impressions of this debate?
I just want to say that for the first time in my life, I'm sort of an undecided voter, which is a sentence I never thought I would
You're
say.
That mythical unicorn they're yes. always looking for.
And I'm always yelling and screaming about how is that possible. But
well, in a general, yeah. I mean,
in a general.
Primary, right. It's a little more acceptable.
Impossible to me in a general. In a primary, though, this one's been really tough for me. I really admire and respect both of them tremendously. And I think if I'm not mistaken, I have one Bernie supporter and one Hillary supporter with me on the podcast tonight. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure, Arliss, where your stance was as of now.
Yeah,
but
I'm a Hillary supporter. I've had a Hillary, a woman's place is in the White House pillow on my couch since the day her store went online, basically, and her yard sign in my front yard. But the Bernie has really impressed me a great deal more than I thought he would, and he's been a much stronger candidate than I thought he would be. Yeah. And I as much as I admire Hillary and I'm going to vote for Hillary, I am. But I get more and more impressed with Bernie. And if it was almost anybody but Hillary or Elizabeth Warren, he would have my vote.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like if it were anybody but Bernie, I think most of the Bernie supporters in my life would vote for Hillary. So it's a really interesting place for me to be in because I've been a Hillary supporter since I can remember. And I was in 2008 also, although, of course, I voted for, campaigned for, and was an activist for Obama. I wanted Hillary. And this round, I sort of came in really energized by Bernie and really loving his message and really thinking that he was tremendous. And I don't disagree with myself. I still think he's really amazing. I think he's getting better and better at running. I still love the exact message that he had coming in. I like that he's been able to refine it and add in some new things in terms of social issues like Black Lives Matter and reproductive rights. But I'm really struggling because Hillary, man, she is qualified. She is presidential. She knows everything. After the Benghazi hearings, of which I watched all 11 hours, I did too. I said, well, that's it. I'm voting for Hillary. I don't care. I'm voting for Hillary. And then I'm struggling so hard. I really am not sure. And my caucus is March 1st, so I better decide.
Yeah. 20 days-ish. Yeah. No, less than that. We're in February, so you got like 18 days.
Yeah, so either one, like I definitely agree with both of you that I don't care. I mean, whoever gets it. I just have really ambivalent feelings about not only who could win, but who would be more effective and sort of moving the goalposts and all that kind of stuff. So I want to get through some of the stuff they talked about and some of everybody's opinions, and maybe by the end of this, you can help me decide.
All right. No pressure.
Yeah, yeah. So
you don't have to decide tonight, Rach. I mean, you know.
You have 18 days.
Right. And it's a caucus. So
yeah, and probably like 12 more debates. So
maybe I'll get to the caucus and someone will change my mind.
That's right. It's a caucus. Who knows what can happen?
Yeah. So opening, anybody want to – I think the big thing for me on the opening was after New Hampshire, Hillary was really being criticized for not having the answer for why do you want to be president.
Yeah.
Her answer seemed to be because I'd be a good president.
Right.
And I agree with her, but that's not the answer people want to hear.
That's not going to inspire the people she needs to inspire.
In the opening, she said, I want to be president because. And then she said, I want to knock down barriers and rebuild ladders for people, basically. Yeah.
Which is good.
She talked about the Black community, immigrants, women, all that kind of stuff. So I think she heard that it resonated with her and she had an answer for that.
My take on the opening was that Bernie is a great man and a great guy. And, everything I hear from people who are associated with him, you know, say he's simply lovely to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he's every debate, every time I hear this man speak, like tonight in the opening, he opens with all the things he's pissed off about.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the reasons people were angry. And he just made a list. This is why they're mad. And this is why they're mad. And this is why they're mad. It's like, okay, I got all that. I knew that. But I got the memo before I came in here. But then Hillary came in and she said, yeah, we agree. Those things are things to be pissed off about. She said, we have much more to do to make sure that Wall Street never wrecks Main Street again. I thought that was a good line. But then she talked about and switched to talking about how we go forward and that we do it together.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's for me. And I think for my kind of voter, that's what we want to hear. We want to hear a positive message.
Right.
I have a kind of a different swing on that later. Well, here's the thing. In New Hampshire, women are concerned about Hillary being trustworthy. That's really what it came down to for her, women in my age group.
Right.
And of course, we all vote.
Right.
So the thing about that is she's not doing a good job of telling her personal story.
Yeah.
And she didn't do that tonight. And she had a perfect opening to do that later when the Madeleine Albright question was asked.
Yes.
And it was a wide open door for her to walk through and talk about the, 1995 and her speaking in China at the Beijing Women's Conference. And it's an incredibly moving story, an incredibly moving moment.
And she has a bunch of stories like that, that she seems to be saving for some reason.
I know. And it's like, Hillary, roll that stuff out, because that's the kind of thing that makes women go, oh, that's why I love you. You've had my back for decades now. That's why I love you. That's why I want to come out and vote.
And she is sharing those stories on the trail, but she doesn't realize she's not reaching everybody on the trail.
I think she's also afraid of not looking substantive in front of a large audience. And this is something I want to speak to at some point, just about being a female politician versus being a male politician and how many paradoxes you have to inhabit at one in every moment, that, you know, you want to be substantive but personable, you want to be masculine and feminine, you want to be all the things at all times, and you can't be that. And I think that I totally agree with you that she dropped the ball, particularly on the Madeleine Albright question, for a couple of reasons. But I think it's such a strangely high standard that we hold her to. And it irritates me because she is a professional politician and she's the best politician that we have. And now we've moved the goalpost and said we don't want a politician anymore. And so now she's got to change what being a politician is, which is not being one. And it just, it's frustrating for me because I honestly, in my heart of hearts, believe that she would be a tremendous president.
Well, and the other thing is, she has to armor up against the GOP in a way that Bernie does not have to now and wouldn't have to if he was running in the general.
Yeah.
They've had their long knives out for this woman for 30 years, basically. I mean, since she was the first lady of Arkansas, they've been after her.
Absolutely.
It's not going to stop. And she, you know, when she talked about a vast right-wing conspiracy, turns out she was right.
Yep.
And, absolutely, she was right. And we talked about this on our podcast last night about, you know, she's only touched on once the fact that Citizens United, which has been like Bernie's big, triumph de resistance, is
stop her.
Yeah, it's about her.
It's about Hillary Clinton. Yeah.
And she only mentioned that in passing once. She needs to be hammering that. And I don't know why she's holding it back. I'm confused about that.
I think that when you hear that she's rethinking things after New Hampshire, I think that's part of what's happening.
I hope so.
Bill knows these things, right? If you watch how Bill campaigns and how he works on, you know, when he's out in public, he knows these lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows to be feeding this to her. And the trick is she needs to stop being who she thought she had to be on the campaign trail and be who she is.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is she going to start stepping into the same traps and making the same mistakes in 2008, which the media the last 2 days is certainly running with? That's exactly what they're doing. But in her debate performance and her consolation speech, it didn't sound like that. So there may be some competing forces within the Clinton campaign. And with Bill, I worry about the propensity to try to go too negative. But, you know, I don't know. That's just an assumption on my part.
I want to go back to what Arliss was saying about Bernie and how he was angry at the opening. And he is throughout much of the debate, right?
Yeah. And
to your point about positivity, I think the interesting thing for me is that when Bernie gets pissed and he starts talking about all the things that are wrong, I think my generation responds to that.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
We are pissed and we feel disenfranchised and we feel taken advantage of and we feel like we have no opportunity. And when you see someone on a national stage take the anger that you feel and say it for you, I think that's part of the reason that my generation is responding so much to him, because we feel like nobody's speaking for us. We don't have a voice.
Yeah.
Completely like, true. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what he reminds me of? It's a Howard Beale election, right? And Arliss, you remember the movie Network, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So
I'm nodding. You can't see me.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. And you know, on the other side, it's because they hate Obama, and the black people and the Muslims are coming to take their wealth they don't have, right? So that's what they're pissed off about. But on our side, we're pissed off for the legitimate reasons. And so you have two mad as hell candidates. One is very a billionaire real estate developer that is just using these vague generalities. But on our side, he's tapped into, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. If it was Howard Beale on that stage, you know, he'd probably be winning. So that's kind of where we are.
Yeah.
And he is able to weave the positivity into it. Like, I mean, I don't want to jump the gun, but when he got to talking about his favorite leaders of all time, and he talked about FDR. I mean, it was as moving a thing as I've seen in this whole election.
But you know what the question was?
Who was most admired, right?
No. Who? Hang on, I have to look up exactly the question. Who are the two leaders who would inspire you most on foreign policy?
Oh, it was
and
a foreign policy
question. He talked
question.
About FDR and all of the domestic things that FDR did. And I thought,
But that's smart, Arliss, because here's the thing. And I talked to Rachel about this. You know, we were texting back and forth. Hillary just crushed it on foreign policy. That is not Bernie's strong suit. That is Hillary's strong suit.
Yeah, she did. She absolutely smoked him.
But on our side, that's way down the list. It's way down the list of what the voters on the Democratic side care about. Some of them do, but it's down the list.
It's always down the list.
Exactly. I
mean, we're going to be better and less likely to put us into war than any Republican.
Right. And then the PBS people, they didn't grasp this either. They went to a break and they're like, well, you know, we went in New Hampshire, but we're moving into South Carolina. And the polls show there that what people really care about is ISIS and Muslims and – you know, and it's like, yeah, none of those people are voting Democratic. They're probably not even watching tonight. So.
Well, it's the I think that part of the problem for the media and even for Hillary is that the GOP is beating on her basically nonstop about everything, but they're enormously chasing her on foreign policy issues.
Right.
Yes.
And boy, that was, I put that sentence together really badly. Sorry about that. Anyway,
I know what you meant.
I'll get there. But, and so I think she gets stuck between trying to sort of deal with them instead of what's right in front of her, which is the primary.
Right.
And that's really difficult. But one of the questions we should all be asking ourselves is why is the GOP running so hard right now against Hillary?
Well, we talked about that last night too, but they made the same mistake in 2008, where they think Hillary is the one that we really don't want to face. We want to face the Sanders guy. He's an old guy. He talks funny. He's a socialist. He's easy. But they thought the same thing about Obama. That's why, you know, that's why the whole Citizens United came about. They made Hillary the hit piece movie that they wanted to air on cable. And it was stopped because they wanted to damage her before the primaries and face Obama.
Right before the primaries, not before the general, because they wanted to face Obama instead of Hillary.
And then they did.
And then careful what you wish for, right?
They could have lost their way, let's be honest.
Quite frankly, I think either one of them is going to be anybody in the current Republican field.
I would think so, yeah.
And particularly if Bloomberg jumps in.
Yeah, that's interesting too. We can get to that later, but no, it's just you see it. I see on the Republican side, they're still saying Hillary, 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 and then every now a moderator goes, oh well, you know, what about Sanders? And they laugh. The audience laughs. Oh, if it's Sanders, we'll win 50 states. It's like, yeah, I'm sure you cretins thought that about Obama. Oh, what? He's a black guy. His name's Hussein Obama, and he's a one-term senator, and he's friends with this Jeremiah. Oh my God, this is going to be so easy. And you know,
surprise,
they haven't figured that out yet. So, yeah, that's why it's all Hillary, Hillary, Hillary all the time. Not only because she's still technically the front runner, but they think she's the tougher one to beat.
Yeah. Okay, so the first question was, how big a role do you see for the federal government?
Oh, God, I hated this question so
I know. And it's already 23% of GDP. Okay.
So the
show that'll air Monday, I spend my whole B block segment talking about GDP and what it really measures and what it doesn't.
Oh, great.
And yeah, so the answer, and that I've been working on that for the last couple of days, and has nothing to do with this. But I mean, in other words, I didn't do it because of this incredibly stupid, uninformed question. But the fact is, it's an incredibly stupid and uninformed question.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
So then Bernie talked about inequality, single payer.
Yeah, he didn't answer it.
Yeah, he kind of he was nowhere close to it. But he did give this number that he keeps putting out that he says the average family will save $5,000 a year. He really, 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 really needs to put that in writing somewhere with the plan, with the data, mm-hmm. so that it can be vetted.
Yes.
Because there's no economist on the planet right now that can figure out how the hell he gets to that number. And it doesn't mean it's not possible to get to that number. He may be right. He may have a plan that people are not understanding. But he needs to put it on his website now.
And Hillary keeps hitting him on that fairly. And you were going to say, Rach.
I was checking PolitiFact after the last debate because she hit him on it then, too, and said, like, that doesn't add up. And I was just sort of trying to fact check. And they sort of said that it's possible based on the average family spends $4,937 or something on health care in a year. And that average family would only be taxed around $500 in increased income tax. I don't know if that's true or not true. But that's the only kind of fact checking I've done on that. And Arliss, I actually have in my notes, Arliss question mark. Like, do you have an idea? About
they don't have enough data since the implementation of the ACA.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
the ACA has changed the whole playing field. And so where, in other words, he needs to put this plan out in light of where we are right now, not in light of where we were 5 years ago or 10 years ago, because we're not there anymore.
Okay.
And prove that it can be done.
But you know,
and
politicians of all stripes.
I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm saying I need to see it.
But you know, politicians of all stripes on both sides use those tricks, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, from, you know, they'd use data that's 10, 20, 50 years old sometimes and say, we're going to save 20%. And they're using antiquated, obsolete numbers. But
we should still hold them accountable when they do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even Bernie, who I support. But
yeah,
here's my theory on Bernie. And I think a lot of his followers and supporters get this too. He's not going to get universal health care through this Congress. Even if we overhaul the Congress and have a huge wave election, like he's promising, you're not going to get it through in 4 years, 8 years. Maybe it could take 20 years or more. You can lay the groundwork, certainly, and get moving in that direction. And I think he knows that. And this is why, in a broader sense, this is why he's winning, right? The pissed off youngsters who are mad as hell and aren't going to take it anymore, they're moved by big ideas. Even if they know maybe in their gut that the reality is probably incrementalism.
But that's my question, Travis. Do they know? Because I have this sense that the younger generation, even younger than me, the 18 to 32, let's say, that maybe haven't been so involved in the political process. I'm not sure that they understand what
they haven't had their hearts broken yet.
Right. They didn't go through Hillary care. They didn't go through the last 20 years of, like,
I'm old enough to remember when it looked like Hillary care was going to happen.
I mean,
like, that there was enough momentum that it might actually happen.
Do they really think, though, that in 4 years? I mean, it's just so unrealistic.
You know, I don't know. I don't want to answer that. I think a lot of them are savvy enough to realize maybe not. But
this country elected the most peaceful, socially just, kind, decent man on the face of the planet to the presidency for exactly one term. And his name was Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
And if you didn't live through that, you don't know what it is to have your heart broken by a presidency. Because we had a truly great man in the White House, a man who could not be bent by special interests.
Honest man.
Yeah, the honest as the day is long, a man you could trust until you died.
And highly patriotic and very much believed in the free enterprise system and was
a nuclear engineer, a smart man.
Yeah, staunchly anti-communist. You know, they accuse him of being soft on communism. He was not soft on communism. He was not soft on radical Islam. He was not any of these things he's painted as.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And politics in this country ate him alive.
Yeah, right. He wasn't nearly as crafty as a Clinton or an Obama because he faced a lot of situational headwinds. You know, things were out of his control. You had the oil crisis, of course, and a lot of the stagflation stuff that there was very little had anything to do with him or anything he could have done.
Yeah, no, he was stuck. Yeah.
Yeah, he was stuck. And you know, obviously with the Iranian Revolution, and you could say, you know, you can look at the Carter administration maybe for some missteps there, certainly. But there were things out of his control. And like Obama's first term, where he inherited a starting to crater economy and then it fully cratered, you know, by the time we got to 2010 and all that energy was just sapped out because all of his supporters were, you know, like me, really struggling and looking for work, and we just didn't have it in us, you know, to get involved in these midterms, and so we got crushed.
Well, and he didn't even, I mean, he and his entire administration, they were busy trying to, you know, hold things together with duct tape and, you know.
And pass ACA, and they did all of that.
Yeah.
And they did,
yeah.
Which is remarkable.
Yeah.
In those first 2 years, they passed ACA and they stopped a worldwide economic collapse.
Global financial crisis.
Which, you know, not enough people appreciate now. They will one day.
Yeah. Speaking of Jimmy Carter, Arliss, does it make your blood boil and make you want to burn the world down when the Republicans say, I want to be like Ronald Reagan because the day he took office, Iran released the hostages?
There aren't curse words.
No, I seriously
cruel enough for me to summarize, particularly since they flew to Paris and made sure that the hostages would not be released. They kept those people imprisoned longer because they cut a deal with the Iranians.
Yeah.
You're talking about the incoming Reagan administration.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, when they say that, I want to throw things at my television pretty seriously.
Yeah, and you know, we weren't even around then. I mean, I was three, but
it's not born.
Yeah, I mean, we know enough of our history that we know how it went down, and we just have common sense, right? That
what was Reagan going to do on inauguration day to really? I mean, come on,
he was going
to
make a phone call and say, "Okay, let's do this."
They were so scared of him because he was such a tough guy, and so they just decided to crumble under the weight of – they don't even – I mean, it's just absurd. I don't want to get into it. But.
No, if you want to use history to anything, maybe he secretly sold them arms. You know, that's the only theory that could possibly work.
Right. The thing – just really quickly wrapping up on the healthcare. I did think Clinton had a smart line when it was her turn, and she said – you know, back before it was called Obamacare, it was called Hillary Care.
Yeah.
And how hard to get it is passed. And then she kind of hit him a little bit and said, you know, we aren't France. We're not the UK. We inherited this system after World War II, and it's different than it is. And I thought that was smart because she's
– Yeah, I wish she would have gone into a little more detail.
And she said, having been in the trenches.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great line because Bernie hasn't fought this for 30 seconds. He has no idea what it takes to get – you know, to do a job like this. And Hillary got beaten up about it. You know, decades ago, she has fighting this war. If people are thinking that single payer is a brilliant idea, Hillary has been fighting that war for decades. She's had your back on that for decades. When she says she wants everyone covered, she means she wants everyone covered. And she's been saying that for longer than most of you have been alive.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. She needs to craft that message better to get through. To understand, but it's that sort of election where, you know, fire and brimstone and movement and passion is what's moving the needle, especially with the younger generation. And that gets back to a broader point. Whichever of these candidates winds up winning, they're going to need a coalition, including African Americans, young people, women. I mean, the Obama coalition is what it's going to take. If you squeak by and you don't make any gains in Congress, then what's the point? Then, you know, then what are we going to do?
Well, we've been talking on our show about, you know, what it's going to take to flip the Senate, because that's really
realistic.
Comes down to, we have got to hold on to the White House. We have got to flip the Senate, because it all comes down to what? The Supreme Court.
Yes.
They didn't even mention that tonight. And I'm sorry, as far as I'm concerned, in my top, you know, right behind economy comes Supreme Court.
Yes, me too.
Well, we finally did get Bernie, and we've been screaming about this at the top of our lungs. In the Democratic debate, we finally did get someone very vociferously. And I loved what Bernie had to say about this. And, of course, I'll leave it to what you guys think about saying Republicans love small government until it comes to legislating a woman's body, then they love it.
Hey,
well, it's that line. The GOP wants government to be just small enough to fit into your bedroom.
Rachel has another version.
Yes, just small enough to fit inside my vagina.
Yeah.
Yep. That's
that doesn't work for the LGBTQ folks, but it's the same basic principle.
Yeah, and it was great. I'm so glad, you know, that he went there.
Yeah.
And I wish they would have let the applause hold longer on that. But then Gwen Ifill had to ask, you know, something about too many government agencies or whatever.
That was another. Okay, so one of the next questions asked was 61% of New Hampshire Democrats are angry at government.
Yeah. So?
I'm sorry.
We're done with New Hampshire.
Spectacularly. Well, not only that, it's a spectacularly bad question because most of them are really pissed off at Congress.
Yes.
Right.
And yes. If you look at the polls, Obama is polling well and Congress is polling at like, 4%. I think they're literally in the single digits.
Yes.
So angry at the government? What question did you just ask these people? I mean, it's oh my God. This is a Democratic debate and we waste our time on that. We didn't talk about Flint. We didn't talk about LGBTQ issues. There was no question about choice, but she asked this ridiculous question. I'm yelling at my television.
No, I think I literally texted Rachel at that.
Indiana yelling
at
my television.
I think, Rachel, didn't I text you at this point and say these moderators just suck?
Yes. I don't remember exactly the words you used, but yeah. Ridiculous. Yeah.
So I'm right with you on that.
Judy Woodruff asked fairly decent questions, but Gwen Ifill, she just tanked it. I thought she just did a terrible, terrible job.
Yeah, I don't know what it was that she's been too much beaten up by Rush Limbaugh calling her a crazy liberal, and it's terrible that she's a moderator, so she had to pretend to be a pseudo-conservative for a second. I mean, I don't know what that was all about, but that sucked.
She wasn't prepared, really. She's sort of like, meh.
But in this question, Sanders said something. He said, who denies that real employment's around 10%, unemployment's around 10%. We need to do away with corporations offshoring money. Mm-hmm. But then he doesn't stop or by the way, for everybody who's out there nodding going, yeah, we have to do away with corporations offshoring money. Yeah, I agree with that too. But then how do you stop corporate inversion? Corporate inversion is when corporations move their headquarters overseas to avoid, they buy a company at some tiny company overseas and they call that their headquarters so that they can offshore their money.
Yeah, even Trump is talking about that.
That's right. So how do you stop corporate inversion if you are going to stop offshoring money? You have to have a plan for that. And it's not that I don't think that Bernie can have a plan for that. I just need to see his plan for that.
Yep.
To get wonky for a second, we talk this is what kind of gets me about these presidential debates, right? They talk about legislation, and the way a president draws up legislation is usually getting some congresspeople in his corner to introduce legislation that he is publicly supporting and that he's going to campaign for, he or she are going to campaign for. Is that right, Arliss, or is there another piece of it?
But here's the thing about that. So Bernie keeps talking about doing this like he can write the legislation.
He's thinking like a senator.
Because he's thinking about, he's thinking about it from the perspective of being a senator. But listen to the way Hillary talks about it. She talks about it from an administrative, an administration perspective.
Right.
And it's not that she hasn't been a senator. It's just that she was in the administration for longer, both, frankly, as first lady and then as secretary of state. But It is a different way of thinking. And I think I don't expect Sanders to be there yet. And so this isn't exactly a criticism. He's going to need to start speaking like he's from a different branch of government than the Senate.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a subtle thing to most voters, Arliss, that you're not as wonky as we are. But I think you're right.
I certainly notice it for sure. Dana and I find ourselves yelling at the television like,
well, it's not just him. I mean, certainly on the other side, they all talk like they can all just write up legislation as presidents.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and magic unicorns and,
Right.
Most candidates talk about it like that because what you're talking about is policy. And it's really hard to tell the American people how you're going to get policy achieved because they think it's about writing bills without saying I'm going to have this bill. So I think it's sort of a nuance that the American voter has a hard time understanding. And so I think a lot of politicians just kind of
Which is understandable, especially
governors, I think, do a better job talking about it as well.
They do. And people like Chris Christie won't let you forget that they know how to do that as executives because they were an executive.
Did you hear any of the on the trail John Kasich speeches when he was like at town halls and things talking to folks.
I've only heard bits and pieces, but we'll get to that after the break. We're going to take a quick break and we will talk about Kasich because I have a couple things to say about Kasich. And then I want to get into the foreign policy stuff because once on a blue moon, that was my wheelhouse. And so hang on and we'll be right back.
Do the bunny hop, 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 hop. All join in the fun, father, mother, son. Do the bunny hop, 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 hop.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We are discussing the Democratic debate here with a very special guest, Arliss Bunny. And during the break, she was telling us all about her bunnies, who sound amazing. We just stick to cats and dogs over here, but her bunnies sound super cool.
They're pretty hilarious. They really are.
So, Rach, what did you want to bring up next? You had a couple talking points you wanted to
get into. Yeah, before the foreign policy stuff, I really wanted to hit on this question that was asked about race relations. The moderator asked basically
this was ridiculous,
and said race relations are going to be so much better under me, and almost no one agrees that that's true. What would make you think that it would be better under you? At which point wanted to throw things at my television.
Let me talk about this one for a hot second. Okay. In the moderator's defense, and this is a weak defense because I think it was Gwen Ifill again.
Yes.
Moderator,
yes, it was.
Knew better. This was a question, right? And it was a completely unfair, ridiculous question. And I didn't like the way either of them answered it. Not that they necessarily answered it badly, but you know, this was a beautiful opportunity to take a swing at the other side and the Tea Party and the demagoguery that has gone on against President Obama. Because this is where this divisiveness is coming from. This isn't that Obama has failed somehow to foster race relations. That's a narrative that feeds into this crap you hear on the other side, that he's been so divisive because he dares to say that cops shouldn't be shooting unarmed black kids. I mean, I was as angry as you. I was more stupefied and incredulous than angry, I think, that she would ask that question. But go ahead, Arliss, what you were going to say.
Well, and then that neither one of them came back and said, well, yeah, exactly what you're saying. Well, if we have a Republican in the White House, that's going to be better.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
– I think it was such like, a ridiculous, stupid was, question. They were caught off guard.
Yeah, it was such an obvious answer, and I think exactly that. I think they were just completely, you know, ba-dum-bup. They completely just didn't know what to say. I think both of them said things that were kind of – interesting, but not
sure, but not what
not
needed to be said.
Yeah. I thought what Hillary said about social media is allowing us to see more of the dark side and force it out into the light.
Right.
And I think that's an excellent observation. And I think that how we use that and what we do with that information is essential. And then she did in the previous answer, actually, the question about Wisconsin has 13% of its African-American men in jail. She smoked Sanders on this. When she said, first of all, she agreed with everything Sanders said, and then she said, my first campaign speech was about about the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. But then she went on and did the thing that Sanders did not do when she talked about Dontre Hamilton. She said his name.
Yes.
And then she went on and talked about education, employment, turfing young men out of school, and housing.
Yes.
Because it isn't just criminal justice. It's all these other things.
Yeah.
And it's the big picture.
Yes.
And she had a much better control of the big picture. I thought it was a great answer. And I think Bernie only got halfway there.
Completely agree with you. And I'm going to go a step further in what they should have said for me. I feel like the fact that Barack Obama is African-American has fundamentally change the way that we look at race relations in this country in a way that makes white people very uncomfortable, and that has come to light and has sort of forced the issue in a way that would probably not have happened had he not been president.
Yeah.
It makes race relations seem a little bit more tenuous. They've always been bad, but because we have this opportunity to see a black man in office and have him come out and give speeches about being a young black man and being targeted and, you know, walking across the street and having people lock their car doors as he's walking across the crosswalk and having been followed in stores and this sort of thing. And then having this series of police shootings and having him talk about that, it's raised the awareness of issues that have been on the undercurrent for decades. And so race relations are not worse than they were. They're more in the public mind and more talked about, and I think that's a really good thing.
Ultimately, I hope so. Yes,
it has to escalate before it gets better. It can't just be this.
And that's easy. That's easy for us to say from our place of privilege because we're not the ones that are the recipients of this increased scrutiny.
I do think they're worse. I think that having a black man in the White House, the black Kenyan Muslim in the White House, has scared bigots.
Yes.
And they have become belligerent and ever more dangerous. In addition, we have seen this militarization of police that's happened at the same time. Mm-hmm. And these differences in training police. You know, under Clinton, a huge amount of money was pushed out into the economy for what they call community-based policing. Guys walking beats in communities, mm-hmm. the same beat all the time. So they would get to know their constituents,
exactly.
You know, the people in their area. And on my show, we interviewed a police chief, and he had nothing but good things to say about community-based policing and nothing but bad things to say about all the clever ideas, the trends in policing that have come along since then. And this is a guy who, you know, talks about you can't when they arrest drug users or when they, you know, come across heroin addicts. He says you can't arrest your way to a solution for that. You must, you know, bring all these resources in and solve the problem a different way. And so I think that Barack Obama has made it worse by exacerbating evil people.
But I think in a way, sure, right? Like, yes, the bigots out there have, I mean, the whole insurgence of the Tea Party is because we had a black man in office. I don't care what else they say about economic policies. They are mad that there's a black dude in the White House. But I also think that in some way, you know, Black Lives Matter has been given a greater voice and a greater validation by having a black man in office.
Sure.
That's positive. And I just don't know that it would have had the impact necessarily that it's had and had the legs that it's had. And I also think maybe I just think it's important that it's being talked about and that it's being given the spotlight rather than just sweeping it under the rug. In the way that we've always done when unarmed black men get shot by cops. Maybe that's technology, maybe it's a lot of things, but I think it's important that every time it happens, or at least most of the time, it makes national news, you know?
Yeah.
It just started happening 5 years ago.
My frustration is that the media, even the so-called liberal media, even the MSNBC types, are still very reticent to call out the obvious pandering to these folks for what it is. And I still don't understand that. And some do, and some do in fits and starts, but they tend to want to more overlook that more, and just
did you hear the congressional
as usual. Go ahead.
Did you hear the congressional black caucus today? Sorry, the congressional black caucus.
I only caught bits and pieces of it.
They endorsed.
Basically,
Hillary.
They said they endorsed Hillary kind of big. And said, you know what? This is somebody who has been with us. She and her husband have been with us for decades, and that matters. You know, they've been in the trenches with us on this from the beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of that, frankly, is that he was the governor of Arkansas. And meanwhile, Bernie lived in Vermont.
Yeah.
What isn't it? Vermont is 93% or 97% white.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not a place where Bernie came up against this problem very often. And yes, he was active in the North, but that's different than being active in the South.
Right.
And the Congressional Black Caucus is recognizing that it's different to be active in the South. Guess what? Way harder.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. And that's a good point.
He's not, you know, empathetic to the black movement. I don't think he was really so much aware of the intricacies of it until he got,
Netroots.
Yeah. And he got heckled by those Black Lives Matter people. And I really give him a lot of credit for being the first to say, oh my God, I didn't know. And sitting down and listening to them and having conversations and changing his policy positions and changing his mind, like mad credit. But I also totally understand the Congressional Black Caucus saying, look, Hillary has known this for years.
And she's been there and we know her and we trust the Clinton brand and the Clinton name. And this is why that, at least in the last polling, we've seen that she has that firewall. Now, I think that's going to take a dent, but I don't know that it's going to be enough where Bernie can possibly overtake her in the southern states like South Carolina and North Carolina and Georgia and Alabama. But we'll get to the, you know, delegate count stuff at another time.
So but the other question under the race relations question, Bernie talked about African-American community lost half their wealth as a result of the Wall Street crash. And that's a great thing to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
But that belonged in a discussion of the economy. And it would have been so pithy and so much more powerful to talk about it when you're talking about the economy and not when you're talking about race relations. Because when you put it in, when you're talking about race relations, it sounds like you're a single issue candidate.
Well, that is
on that specifically. I have. OK, good point. How is that going to make white people stop hating black people?
Yeah, question.
No, right? This is one of my complaints about Bernie. He is myopic about stuff. You know, everything gets twisted back to the 1% in campaign finance. And yeah, those are really, really important things, but they're not a panacea answer to everything. And he gets wrapped up in that sometimes. But, you know, where does Gwen Ifill get off asking that friggin' question?
Oh, no, it was terrible.
Basically, why is Obama so divisive? You know, the Fox News, Fox and Friends morning talking point. Like, where does she get off saying that in a Democratic debate or anywhere for that?
And then the following question about don't white people have the right to be resentful? I was like, I'm just going to throw you away. Like, I don't even know what to say about these questions at this point.
Yeah, and it disappointed me a little that both – Hillary sort of took the bait and then went on and said, oh, yeah, that, you know, white people are suffering too. And
Bernie,
we haven't forgot about you white people. And it's like,
well,
he almost got there. He was like, you know, yes, white people are going through these economic issues. So are black people. And if he had said the following sentence, however, black people have these additional things that they have to deal with that poor white folks don't have to deal with.
Yeah.
Then you nail the answer. But he just missed it by that hair of, yes, it's really upsetting for these white people that have experienced this economic loss. Black people also have this economic disparity and XYZ social issues that those white folks don't necessarily have to deal with. That's when you nail the answer for me. And they both missed by a mile on that.
So, no, they didn't. Here's why.
Okay.
I totally disagree.
Okay.
So if I go out the on the second floor door of my house onto the top floor porch, if I had a good throwing arm, I could throw a baseball and hit coal country.
Yeah.
In other words, I can see it, as Sarah Palin would say, I can see it from my house.
Only you're telling the truth.
Yeah, only I'm telling the truth. It's really right there. And those distressed communities they're in deep shit.
Yeah.
Deep. Coal production is down to 30% of what it was 5 years ago. Thank God. It's not that I don't think that's awesome. I couldn't be happier that coal production is down.
It needs to be. Yeah,
it needs to be. Yay. But those communities are in terrible, terrible trouble. And here in the Ohio River Valley, that is a big, big deal. And the Ohio River, it's a big river if you haven't seen it. You know, go on Google Maps and take a look. These states, all of these states up and down here that are affected by coal country are in trouble. And Hillary knows that. She's not playing to the coasts. She's playing. That answer was for people who live where I live.
Yeah.
Right.
She absolutely targeted that baby in a straight line for here. And that was smart. It was a smart answer to a really, really dumb question.
Okay, great. I agree the question was dumb. And you're probably right, especially looking at what they were saying about the New Hampshire exit polls in terms of in 2008 that she had the sort of underemployed, undereducated sort of blue-collar white worker vote, which went to Bernie in 2016. And I think maybe she's trying to recapture that.
Yeah.
Well, New Hampshire's not coal country, so that's...
No, but you know. but that blue-collar, you know... white worker she
yeah,
had
yeah but vote. But that's kind of my point. Let's not get carried away. Like, the pundits do this. They talk about how strange and unique in Iowa, New Hampshire, and why do they go first, and then they take those exit polls and run with them as if they're representative of the rest of the country.
Yeah,
and they're really not. So white working class folks in New Hampshire have completely different priorities than white working class folks in Indiana or Ohio.
I mean, it is somebody who, I mean, I'm a Californian who moved to this part of the country. And so it took me a long time to develop an ear for the politics here. And I'm still, you know, I'll never be a Hoosier because I wasn't born here.
Right.
But it took me a long time to develop any kind of ear for the difference between politics here and politics elsewhere that was really that really resonated with what goes on here. And it's like the first week I was back here, they were still rehabbing the building that became our manufacturing facility. And one of the guys on the crew came up to me and he said, "What do you want me to do with them flowers?" And I said, "We can worry about the landscaping after we get done with the inside." And he looked at me like I was some kind of freaking alien. And he said, "No, the flowers." He's saying floors. I mean, I was here 2 years before I could understand what people were saying to me in the grocery store. So it's, I mean, it is a different part of the country, and it is very localized. And Hillary knew that. That question was absolutely, she had thought about that. She had that plan, her coal country distressed communities plan, in her pocket, and she was waiting for a minute to drop that in. And she dropped it on a stupid question, but she picked a good time.
Rach, was there another one you want to talk about before we get to the foreign policy stuff? Because I have some opinions on that.
Nope.
So foreign policy, which gets an inordinate amount of time in Democratic debates because most Democratic voters just don't give a crap about it, and we get the same rehashed stuff over and over and the same fights and arguments. And Democrats, unlike Republicans, aren't convinced that ISIS is going to start paratroopering, you know, in and murdering us in our sleep. So it's not, you know, at the top of our list of concerns, but since so many people are talking about it on the other side, you know, these debate moderators think we have to talk about it for an hour in every Democratic debate. But once we got past the ISIS stuff, a couple things perked my ears up, and I knew this was going to come back to bite her last debate when Hillary invoked Kissinger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rachel knows that before I got into public health and got into clinical research and got into podcasting and music production and everything else, I was an international relations major. And I graduated with a degree in that and did pretty well. I graduated with honors. I got offers to intern at the DOD and the FBI and some think tanks in Washington, and I decided ultimately not to go that direction, but this used to be my jam, my thing. And Kissinger, even though I had plenty of professors that loved the guy, was one of the most reviled, in my opinion, just learning about the world and the way the world worked and the Cold War and everything else, one of the most reviled figures I had ever come across. And when she invoked him in the last debate, Rachel and I were together, we both kind of cringed, went, "Oh, no, did you just, you know, invoke Kissinger?"
Yeah, no. I said the same thing. It's like, no.
Yeah, and then
it's despicable.
And then I'm thinking, oh, Bernie's going to lay the wood to her on this. And he didn't then, because, you know, maybe he needed some time to think about it, but he really did tonight. And I was definitely fist pumping for that. And then she tried to, you know, be more nuanced. Well, he did help open the door to China. And then Bernie had an interesting pivot. You know, he said, "Oh, yeah, open the door to China so we could do these horrible trade deals I hate." And that was clever. It was, you know, not quite exactly in the line of what the question was about, but clever on Bernie's part.
But she got the second biggest applause of the night when she said she listened to Kissinger on China. She listens to a lot of people. She listened to Kissinger on China, and she picks and chooses based on the topics because the world is big and complicated.
Yeah.
At which point she got the second biggest applause of the night.
Hell of an answer.
Yeah, it was a good comeback, and I'm sure that, again, she had that in her pocket because she had to know that that baby was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can't help – every time I watch Hillary debate, even though I'm a Bernie supporter, I can't help fantasize thinking of a general debate, Hillary v. Cruz, Hillary v. Trump.
God. Rubio.
Hillary v. Rubio.
Oh, that would just be – I'm sorry. That would just be cruel.
It would be unfair. It really would. And, you know, we may indeed get that. But, I mean, she'll eat these people alive on foreign policy, which is, you know, they think is their
jam. That's their thing, yeah.
Yeah. So, no, she definitely has the upper hand. But, again, I was texted this, Rachel, too. As far as foreign policy goes, it's just not high up on the list of what the Democrats care about. And the people who really, really care about it, because they're afraid of ISIS and they're afraid of the Russians and they're afraid of everything, they're not going to vote for either of these candidates. I mean, a few of them might, but by and large, no.
Which makes me crazy, considering she's the Secretary of State. If you're really looking for foreign policy acumen, how do you not vote?
But she's the Secretary of State that's been demonized for Benghazi.
Blah, blah, blah. I don't care.
You don't care, but they do.
For people who care about foreign policy to not vote for Hillary Clinton, that's...
Well, and people who care about Benghazi are not voting for a Democrat no matter what. So,
right, exactly.
I mean, those were never going to be our voters. But I want to go backwards, because I want to go back to something that people do care a lot about and are voting on in this election. And that was the George Soros, Donald Sussman gave Clinton $10 million question. Because that came down to two things. That came down to an economics issue, and it also came down to campaign finance reform issue. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting how they sort of fought their way through that. And by the way, somebody needs to tell Bernie not to make grumpy man faces while Hillary's talking when he thinks he has a lot to say.
And wave his arms like he's waiter, check please. Yeah.
Well, he does that thing with his face where he just anyway.
It's not as bad as McCain, but it's
yeah. It's like, keep your face passive and then pounce. Come
or
on.
Smile. Or smiling is okay.
Look polite and thoughtful. Don't look like you're, you know, going to explode before she gets done with her sentence.
It's Al Gore and George W. Bush all over again, right?
Which not quite that bad, but...
Yeah.
He keeps saying, I don't have a super PAC.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know the very, very fastest way to lose the general election? Is to unilaterally disarm. I absolutely agree we have to get rid of super PACs. I am all about that. We cannot unilaterally disarm. That's insanity. That's how you lose a general election. Somebody needs to take him aside and tell him that the general election is not the same as running for the Senate. It is not the same as running in a primary.
But he
the
can't go back on it now, can he?
Or frigging real.
But he can't go back on it now, can he?
He's going to have to do – well, I don't know what the hell he does. But the fact is you cannot win a general in this day and age without taking money from a super PAC. You can't. You can win the primary.
So
what he's doing right now is absolutely astonishing.
Well, Obama re-election had a super PAC. Obama 08 had a super PAC as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I knew most of what he got was through individual donations, and Bernie's obviously making a big deal of that, and we know there's going to be so much Coke money and whatever money to whoever's running on the other side, unless it's Trump. But then Trump has his own money, and you know he can draw money from any kind of source he wants, and I'm sure he'd get Sheldon Adelson money or whatever he needed when it came down to it.
Well, remember in 08 there were the GOP actually ran campaign ads against George Soros.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Oh yeah,
because that's a dumb too. It's a boogeyman as far as they're concerned. As far as moderates and Democrats, I would hope there was a big shrug.
I mean, Glenn Beck used to rail about George Soros every hour.
Yeah, we don't hear about George Soros anymore. Now it's the guy who emails Hillary. What's his name?
Oh.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name right now.
Sidney Blumenthal.
Sidney yes. Blumenthal.
Good
thank
job,
you. He's the
Rachel.
Boogeyman.
Yeah. Anyway, just for all of you out there, just make a note. Bernie is, if he makes it through the convention, and he may very well, if he makes it through the convention, he is going to have to turn around on this. And we are going to have to gracefully let him. And then it's going to have to be his first priority or one of his first priorities to put an end to camp, you know, to this.
Well, we will, but the other side will kill him for it.
The other side's going to nail him.
And so, as will the media.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But they were, here's the thing. We have to suck it up and know we were never going to get their votes anyway. Let them yell and scream about all that shit. Because the fact is, all we have to do is get our people out. There are more of us than there are of them. We have to get our people out.
Exactly. You're right. I was going to actually write a diary about that, about how we have to stop arguing with conservatives on Twitter and trying to convince our conservative, you know, uncle-in-laws and what have you to switch sides. We're wasting our breath. Well, we have probably 10 people in our circle who will vote for who we want to. We just have to motivate them to get out to the polls.
Actually vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a good point.
Yeah. So here's the economic question that came up in this George Soros answer. And it was something Bernie said at the end. And he's been saying it consistently on the stump. And he talks about a 21st century Glass-Steagall, which is McCain-Warren.
Yes.
McCain-Warren. And I'm all about that. I could not be happier to have a 21st century Glass-Steagall. I could not be happier to have McCain-Warren get itself passed at some point in time as soon as humanly possible.
Right.
Here's the problem. Glass-Steagall would not have stopped the 2007 global financial crisis because that occurred in shadow banking.
And she brought
that
up.
Shadow banking wasn't covered by Glass-Steagall.
Yeah.
And she talked about shadow banking prior to him talking about 21st century Glass-Steagall. And she's right, folks. Just so you know, we do have to go farther than Glass-Steagall. Glass-Steagall is not enough. It's important, and we got to have it. And, you know, let's all get behind that and stay behind that. And
that's not to say Bernie doesn't realize that and doesn't plan to address that. He just sticks to the narrative of the big banks are too big. And and she's right, because since he's not bringing it up, she's right to say, well, there's more to it than that. And
can you quickly tell our listeners, like, just a real quick rundown of McCain-Warren, what are we talking about?
Okay, so here's the absolute Reader's Digest version, or the Twitter version of McCain-Warren. It puts a wall back into banking. And so banking becomes boring again, and gambling is gambling. And it puts a wall between those two aspects of these big banks and makes it so FDIC-insured government backing would apply to the boring side of banking. In other words, your checking account and my checking account. And the gambling side, the investment portfolios that these banks are carrying would not be covered. So,
nor should they be, for God's sake.
That's right. If they gamble wrong, they go the hell down.
Okay.
And not with our money.
And I'll get behind that.
Yeah. So, it's really important legislation. It really, really needs to pass. We all need to get behind it. Bernie's completely right about that. He's completely right to put that toward the front of his campaign and talk about it every day. Good for him.
So, just sort of wrapping up thoughts about the debate. Overall, I thought Hillary won, but not by a ton. But again, it could do wonders for her in terms of shoring up her support who were getting nervous. I don't think it's going to dissuade any Bernie supporters, his performance. And Bernie definitely was big on counterpunching tonight. Like, you know, he never wanted her to get the last word. So he was thinking, I think, kill shot. Like, right, he's got her on the ropes. And he's just got to get the last word in on everything. Sometimes it was effective, sometimes not so much. But I think it was a really strong night for Hillary. You know, I don't know how the media is going to spin it. What do you guys think?
I would say I think Hillary knocked it out of the park for me tonight. I love Bernie's ideas. I love the man. I think for me, the closing statement that Hillary Clinton made was the most profound or powerful thing she said all night, which this needs to become her here's the daylight between us statement. And that is that she said, I'm not a single issue candidate. I totally agree with everything Bernie says about the economy. However, there's other things that the economy is not going to fix. If Bernie got his way on the economy, it wouldn't have fixed Flint. It wouldn't have fixed – you know, all these other issues that we're dealing with, systemic racism and sexism and all of these different things, are still a problem beyond this sort of myopic economic class war. And she didn't use those words. Those are my words. And I agree with her. Like, everything Bernie says is absolutely true. But I feel like that's where she hit him, was like, because especially in this debate, everything went back to the economy, even when it was inappropriate.
Yeah.
And her being like, okay, but all these other things exist too, and I'm the person that's here to address all of them in a broader sense. That needs to be her new message. And I thought it was on point. I think he's tremendous. I think he's passionate. I believe him. I think that he is authentic. I don't know. I'll probably vote for Hillary, but I love Bernie, so I don't know.
He needs to broaden his message for sure. But you know what? They're both making each other better.
Yes.
Bernie's gotten so much better at debating.
Yeah. Go ahead, Arliss.
Well, they both they need each other right now. They need, if we are going to win the general, these two candidates need to keep polishing each other and getting better and better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why I'm glad they're both smart and passionate and you know, in it to win it. So I love that about this particular Democratic race. I'm glad it's not all Hillary all the time. I'm really, really glad. And I absolutely agree, Rachel. I think that Hillary, not only did Hillary's closing statement hit it out of the park, and by the way, I wrote down exactly what you wrote down, what you just read. I literally, and then I highlighted it. Bernie, he answered that last question, the Franklin Roosevelt and Churchill question. He got to the end and he started whining at Hillary, and he sounded like, you know, the last I heard was live in a democracy and we have the right to disagree with the president, and President Obama and I are friends, and I'm really unfair to suggest that I've been unsupportive, and one of us ran against Obama and I wasn't that candidate. And it was like, Bernie, you're a grown up. You get to speak like a grown up. You do not lower yourself to that.
He doesn't have a good answer for that, right? And he can feel it's unfair. But the fact of the matter is he did – remember this. I remember it well because the Fox News sphere was running with it that, you know, he was sending out feelers to see if somebody could primary Obama, right? And he had some virulent disagreements, and he thought Obama was selling out a little bit. And I think most Democrats probably forgive him for that, but it's a valid attack from Hillary. I mean, it's the fact. It's like, you did and you said this. And, you know, you might say, well, what you're implying isn't fair. But, I mean, you know, all he can come back with, really.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason he got so upset, the reason he went there and got to the whiny stage, was that what happened to him just before that is that Hillary said, you know, today, you know, Senator Sanders said that President Obama failed the leadership test. I just couldn't disagree more. Obama doesn't get the, you know, credit he deserves. And she, you know, went on that little brief speech. And then she got the biggest applause of the night.
Yeah, I remember.
That's what did it for Bernie. That's what pushed him over
can't
the
let,
edge.
Can't
He's
let
like,
that stand.
Whoa, she just, you know, she just praised Obama and they're all going crazy out there. So that's why he got, sure. That's what pushed him to that place. But I think she ended really, really strong. And I think she has gotten the message that, you notice that Bernie brought up the no-fly zone, but she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
She is getting the message about what's working and what's not. And what's not is coming out of her dial, you know, her speeches, her what she has to say. It's being pulled out. And it'll be interesting to see in another week what she's saying and how that's, you know, how she's evolving. And same thing for Bernie. That's the point of having two great politicians.
Yeah.
Duke
it out.
Bouncing off each other. Yeah.
Aren't we glad there's not five of them at this point?
It helps. Yeah.
Thank God it's only two. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Arliss, email scandal. A, is it going to get resolved sometime soon? B, is it going to drag her down?
No. No, because so many other government officials are in this same boat, and half of them are Republicans.
Yeah.
And when Colin Powell steps up and says it's not an issue, and I did it too. And by the way, my account was on Yahoo or whatever it was. I forget what he was, you know.
Yeah.
He was had a Gmail or
Yahoo. C_Powell@Yahoo.
Yeah, exactly. It was something like that. You know, it was an even less secure environment, you know.
Yep. But he's not running for president.
But that's going to wash it out.
Maybe. It hasn't yet.
And again, I think that it's just a matter of time. It's like, you know, we heard Benghazi. Now ask yourself how much you care about Benghazi and why.
You heard
about it nonstop for months and months and months.
But the FBI, because no, you're right in terms of, you know, Trey Gowdy and Fox News can scream about this, you know, forever and people have tuned it out. But the FBI at some point is going to need to come out and say, our investigation is complete and
she's clear.
And for the future, we recommend this or that, which is what I think is going to happen.
But can they please do that before Super Tuesday?
Well, no, it's not going to happen before Super Tuesday. That's,
no, it's not. They're going to move at the pace that they move. And I think that President Obama is trying to keep his administration out
as
of
as much
the,
as he can.
You know, he's trying not to play favorites. And he does have a favorite, but he's trying not to play favorites. He's trying to be the president of the entire country for, you know, this, you know, during the primaries. And I think that's smart. And Hillary's going to have to, you know.
No, I don't think this investigation, unless there's some bombshell breaks in the next few weeks, and the New York Times will pretend there's a bombshell whenever anything leaks out. But, you know, anything, it's not going to affect her in the primary. It's in the general. It could really be an albatross if this doesn't get cleared up before then.
Yep.
Yeah. It'll.
If this, there's an FBI investigation, she's under indictment. You know, people are going to think she's Chris Christie or something.
No, I have friends, lawyers, who literally think that she's going to get the cuffs slapped up on her any day. And granted, they're partisan, but I think they're full of crap. But before, you know, until the FBI unequivocally says our investigation is done and there's nothing to see here, move along. Which, yeah, they'll scream that Obama rigged it, but you know, it'll be pretty much settled in most independent voters' minds. And then we can move on. But if that's still hanging over when we get into November, that's a problem, big problem.
I agree.
Would you agree, Arlis?
I agree about it.
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to be. I think by June we see the resolution of it one way or the other.
Okay.
And I think it falls in her favor.
I would tend to agree.
No question.
Being as unbiased as I possibly – being a unbiased Democratic Bernie supporter, I have to agree. It seems unfathomable to me based on all I know that she's going to be indicted for something.
Right.
So anyway,
no one has ever been more investigated than the Clintons.
You would think,
ever.
Right?
And by the way, just FYI, part of that, you know, part of what they have in their arsenal, the best lawyers in the country work for the Clintons.
Yep.
They sure do.
They'll solve this problem.
Not to sound cynical.
Feel better, Arlis. Thanks.
So real quick, you wanted to mention Kasich because I have an opinion or two on Mr. Kasich.
Yeah. So I live in the Cincinnati metro area. So I get Ohio news. That's what comes into my house.
Mm-hmm.
And John Kasich is really, really good at looking like a genial good guy. He's an ass, by the way.
Exactly.
All of you. He's an ass.
Exactly.
On women's issues. He's horrible. But he's really good at looking like a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really good at running and sounding positive. If you had heard, I was flipping around on channels, something I literally never do. And somehow or other, I ended up on a John Kasich stump speech.
Mm-hmm.
And only Republican running who talks about positive things, not about all the bad things that have gone on in the past, not about, you know, disaster and destruction and all the reasons you should be mad.
Right.
He's talking about, you know, the good things and what we can do together and how the nation moves forward. And it's, you know, he's sounding like a grown up. He's sounding suspiciously like a grown up.
And he throws some moderate bones out there. Like, let's not totally hate gay people. Right.
That's right.
Let's not hate all the Muslims, guys.
Yeah.
So and everybody goes, oh, he's a moderate. There's a moderate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's in no way moderate.
No.
But he sounds that way. And the New Hampshire voters reflected that also. This man knows retail politics.
Oh,
he runs a friggin' hell of a ground game.
Yes.
He has a machine. Because Ohio is not an easy state to win. And he, you know, he's running against a bunch of lightweights in many ways. And
well, not John only Kasich, lightweights,
this whole time has been just laying in wait. He knew he couldn't win in Iowa, so he didn't even go there, basically.
Yeah. And extremists. He's running against a bunch of extremists. So he's de facto moderate compared to these guys. But he's not moderate. Look at his record on reproductive rights. It's a horror show. Look at his record on voter ID. Yeah, some moderate. Yeah. Look at his record on taxes. Look at his record on now he did accept Medicaid expansion because it makes sense to do. There's so many governors that are ruining
because he can add.
Right, that are ruining their economies to spite Obama. You know, Texas, of course, being one of them where I lived. So, okay, yeah, you're a big moderate, and then he can parlay that into, see, I care about poor people, and I don't want them to die on the streets. It's like, no, you want to, you know, keep your narrative of having your books balanced, and that big infusion of federal money is going to help you. So he's no moderate, and I'm actually working on a Daily Kos article that I should have up tomorrow about Kasich is no moderate. But
that's what I was just going to say, Trav, because Arla started talking about it, and I was like, this sounds suspiciously like the article that you're writing right now.
And the thing to really know about him is that he knows how to run a political machine. I mean, his campaign in New Hampshire was extremely well run. And the only candidate, by the way, who got himself to Dixville Notch, John Kasich. John Kasich went everywhere. Everywhere there was a voter, John Kasich was there.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. But
His team has been on the ground in South Carolina and Nevada. They've already bought their airtime there.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to have any traction there. I mean,
I don't know that he is or isn't. I'm just saying.
It's Trump and Cruz all the way. And then W's campaigning for Jeb. It might as well be W. Jeb third. And I don't think Kasich has. But if Kasich can hold on till some of those Ohio River Valley states, he can do really well there. So he could hang around and be a spoiler for a while, I would think.
Well, and I think that now that Rubio is you know, circling the drain, because really, how do you come back from that debate performance? The whole country's laughing about it. Republicans are laughing about
it. I wouldn't count out Rubio out because the rest of the field is so bad.
Except that the establishment Republicans have to unify behind somebody. They can't unify behind Bush. And Rubio is circling the drain. So I think the next man standing is the guy who just came in second in New Hampshire and knows how to run a campaign and knows how to fool voters into thinking that he's more moderate than they think he is. And they're going to think he can pull more independents. So I think
they're going to rally around Kasich.
Yeah, I think the establishment's going to Kasich. Besides, imagine running a Texas-Ohio ticket.
Yeah, well, I mean, Texas is safe territory.
And what does Bernie Sanders look like on a debate stage with John Kasich, who's this really genial, positive, happy-go-lucky, moderate-seeming, you know, presidential-looking guy, and then you have this crazy-haired, yelling, frothing-at-the-mouth socialist?
Well, sure, but Kasich is still going to try to have to defend trickle-down Reaganomics somehow for an electorate that doesn't want to hear that. So, yeah, so what?
Well, they're all trudging up that hill because I think, you know, this country has lived under the GOP now long enough to, you know, you just have to look at Kansas and Indiana.
But people don't.
Republicans
in those states still want to say things are going okay, which seems bizarre to me.
Which is really bizarre.
Exactly to your point, Arliss, about Kansas with Sam Brownback and the nightmarish budget situation they have there, or the economy just generally. Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, and Pence has done the same thing to Indiana. We're coming in close behind
Brownback.
But they both managed to get reelected.
Managed to get reelected. Uh-uh. Pence is running for re-election, and we're going to get his ass this time.
Oh, I hope so. God, I hope so.
Well, he's talking Kansas that Brownback may have rigged that election because not even the Republican Party wanted him to win, and there was just some talk the other day on
Well, he controls everything. He obviously controls the Kansas Supreme Court. We know that.
Yeah.
Oh, what I'm saying is that there were some news reports about some voting machine tampering in Kansas.
Well, it'd have to be the Justice Department that got involved to investigate, right?
Yeah, following up.
Oh, well, I'll keep an eye on that.
The meanwhile in Indiana, Pence has dumped his lieutenant governor and is running with a different lieutenant governor now. But he's in big trouble because he so badly embarrassed the state with his LGBTQ. Yeah, the DOMA, the LGBTQ, that whole mess.
Sorry.
Yeah. And then the Syrian refugee thing. Yeah. And he so badly, badly embarrassed the state that the business community is mad.
And the clergy.
Yeah. And when I say the business community, I don't mean little tiny businesses like me. I mean Eli Lilly. I mean Cummins. I mean Angie's List. I mean big companies. They're mad.
Well, is he going to get primaried, or is there a Democratic contender that looks promising in Indiana?
Indiana's running the same guy we ran last time. We're just running him smarter, and we're running against a Pence that everybody hates. Pence's approval rating is in the teens.
Mm. Wow.
He's in deep. You know, he's backed himself into a serious problem.
That would be great to see.
Everybody
but, you know,
thinks it's bastard. It really is awful.
I'm so deflated now because I couldn't stomach the idea of Rick Scott being reelected in Florida, and he was. I couldn't stomach the idea of Brownback being reelected, and by one means or another, he was.
Walker.
And Walker, yeah. I thought, you know, Walker. There's a great chance to get Walker, and we couldn't get him. Again, though, it's about turnout and down ballot, and we gotta get the turnout. We have to get it.
Well, we just barely missed beating Pence last time, just barely. And the thing about him this time is that he's done a spectacularly bad job. He's tanked the economy, and Republicans are complaining about him. So he's in much bigger trouble than people thought.
Hey, Arliss, remember a few months back when people said that Pence and Rick Snyder might throw their hat in the GOP presidential ring?
We in Indiana were laughing about that. We were deeply entertained. The only way the man got elected in the first place was because Mitch Daniels couldn't run a third time.
Right. But we won't get too in the weeds on Indiana politics, but I do follow it a little bit. It is interesting.
It is.
Also the birthplace of my favorite author, Kurt Vonnegut, so there's that.
Oh, my God. He's my least favorite author on the planet.
Really?
Oh, to God.
Well, this has got to be a
story. There's a huge mural of him in Indianapolis, but I have a funny Kurt Vonnegut story.
Well, this will have to be a podcast for another time because we were
okay.
Running way over here, but it's been good. Definitely want to get you back on. And we're wondering if your partner, Will, might want to come on sometime and you know, get join in the millennial Gen Xer. Well, he's a millennial, right?
Yes, he is.
To get in on that, so.
I'm sure he would. I'm awesome. Absolutely sure he would.
That would be great. So, check out Arliss's podcast. Go ahead and plug your website and everything, Arliss.
We're Hopping Mad. We air on Netroots Radio at 8 a.m. on Mondays, and we're available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Our website is IM, as in capital I, capital M, hoppingmad.com, and you can find us on Twitter at @IAmHoppingMad.
Great. And scroll back through the archives there and you'll hear Rachel and I on a very early morning joining in for a roundtable.
It's delightful.
With me on a terrible microphone. You can barely hear me, but I'm there.
And if you want to know more about economics, Arliss is the person to listen to. I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And she might be filling in for David Waldman when then he has to like take his kids in the morning and there's dead air or something. it's very nice of you to volunteer that.
Well, he was kind of a little desperate one morning, and I thought, man, if I'd known, I'd have helped out. I could have, you know.
And I'm talking to him about maybe putting together a best of Greg Dworkin because everybody really likes Greg, but he has to just pop in and run before he runs off to do surgery or whatever he does. And so might help him put that together. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, so. I love Greg, particularly on polling and on vaccination.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. He's great. Wish he had time to do his own show. But so that's about going to wrap it up for us. We will be back, of course. We've been doing a lot. We've been like cranking one of these out like every couple days, haven't we, Rach?
Yes, we have.
We'll probably be doing our live stream again, although I'm not sure too many people watched. I guess we're just not that telegenic after all, Rachel. I don't know. They listened to the podcast when I put the audio up later. They just didn't want to watch us live. So
the people are busy at 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. So
Will keeps saying he wants to do a video cast, and I'm saying, well, yeah, we can do it on your side, but my side it's going to have to be like a rabbit cam or something. Because
oh, that's fine. No, on ours, we have cats like walking in front of the camera and like dogs knocking over the microphone. It's, you know, we're in the same boat. So, this is Reverend Testimony signing off. Hate mail to irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Just look up Irreverent Testimony, at Irreverent Duo on Twitter. And as usual, I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And as usual, stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and we'll see you later.
Still, there is no other pill to take.